The numbers are wrong, and everyone in the room knows it. It is late. The offices are quiet. Computer screens glow with spreadsheets that refuse to cooperate. A quarter is about to close, and the earnings target is still out of reach. Someone says the gap will be fixed. Someone else asks how. No one answers out loud. Inside HealthSouth, pressure moves faster than paperwork. Managers talk about expectations. Executives talk about confidence. Analysts wait for results that must not disappoint. The books sit open, thin and exposed, daring someone to tell the truth. An accountant hesitates, finger hovering over the keyboard. The adjustment is small on paper. It feels enormous in the chest. This is not a correction. It is a decision. Outside the building, the market believes the story it is about to be told. Inside, reality is being pushed aside line by line. Each entry buys time. Each entry deepens the lie. By morning, the numbers will look perfect, and no one will admit how they got there. Chapter 1. The quarter that could not miss. The pressure did not arrive suddenly. It built quietly, quarter by quarter, inside conference rooms and behind closed doors at HealthSouth. By the late 1990s, the company had become a Wall Street favorite. Its growth story sounded clean and reliable. Rehabilitation hospitals were expanding, revenues climbed, analysts expected consistency, then acceleration. Internally, the numbers told a more fragile story. Finance teams worked through routine, close cycles that no longer felt routine. Actual earnings lagged projections, reimbursement rates tightened, costs rose faster than expected. The gap between what the market wanted and what the books showed began to widen. Executives spoke often about confidence. They emphasized the importance of meeting expectations. Missing a quarter, they warned, could damage credibility for years. This was framed as stewardship, not threat. The message was repeated often enough that it no longer sounded optional. At the end of each quarter, meetings grew tense. Forecasts were reviewed line by line. Adjusted numbers were compared against analyst consensus. When the gap appeared, it was treated as a problem to be solved, not a signal to reset guidance. No one used the word fraud in these rooms. The language was softer. Fix it, smooth it, make it work. These phrases carried weight without leaving fingerprints. For staff accountants and finance managers, the stakes were personal and immediate. Careers in corporate accounting are built on trust and discretion. Speaking up can mark someone as difficult. Staying silent can feel like survival. Inside HealthSouth, the hierarchy was clear. Instructions flowed downward. Questions did not flow back up. Allegations later stated that employees were directed to adjust entries after normal business hours. These claims would become central to the case years later. At the time, they were experienced as quiet expectations. Stay late, review the numbers again. There has to be a way. Proven facts established later showed that the company reported earnings that significantly exceeded its actual performance over multiple quarters. How those figures were created would be dissected in court. In this moment, only the pressure mattered. Emails were careful, conversations were not. Instructions were delivered verbally whenever possible. The fewer records, the better. This approach was not written policy, but employees learned quickly how decisions were communicated. Some accountants raised concerns. They asked whether certain adjustments complied with accounting standards. The responses varied. Sometimes they were reassured, sometimes they were ignored. Sometimes they were told bluntly that the numbers had to work. The culture rewarded compliance. Employees who made the numbers fit were praised as team players. Those who resisted found themselves isolated from key discussions or reassigned. None of this required formal discipline. The message was understood. Outside the company, the market responded exactly as expected. Stock prices rose. Analysts issued favorable reports. HealthSouth appeared stable, even impressive. Each successful quarter reinforced the belief that the strategy was working. This success deepened the internal bind. Admitting earlier misstatements would mean unraveling years of reported performance. The longer the pattern continued, the harder it became to stop. Executives spoke about momentum. They described the company as too big to stumble. Investors trusted them. Employees felt the weight of that trust pressing down through the organization. By this stage, the gap between reported earnings and reality was no longer a rounding issue. It was structural. Fixing it would require acknowledging failure, covering it required continued manipulation. Allegations later described a system where false entries were layered across accounts. This chapter does not establish those mechanics. What is established is the environment that allowed them to flourish, a culture where missing expectations was unacceptable, a leadership tone that equated skepticism with disloyalty. Some employees began keeping private notes. Others confided in spouses or close friends. Most did nothing. Silence felt safer than resistance. The stakes extended beyond individual careers. HealthSouth was a public company with thousands of employees and patients who depended on its facilities. Decisions made in accounting offices rippled outward, even if those ripples were invisible at first. As quarters passed, the process became routine. Late nights at the end of reporting periods were expected. Adjustments appeared with minimal explanation. The books closed on time, every time. No alarms sounded publicly. Internally, the unease grew. What had started as pressure to meet expectations had evolved into a test of obedience. The question was no longer whether the numbers were right. It was who would challenge them. By the close of another quarter, the earnings target was met again. The market applauded. Inside HealthSouth, a quiet understanding settled in. This was no longer temporary. And once that realization took hold, the real danger began. Chapter 2, when the fix became the system. By the time another fiscal year rolled forward, the pressure inside HealthSouth had hardened into routine. What once felt like emergency measures now looked like standard operating practice. The company did not simply chase earnings. It depended on them. Inside accounting departments, the adjustments were no longer framed as temporary bridges. Allegations later stated they were treated as solutions. Each quarter began with a number already in mind. The work that followed was about making the books land there. Employees described a shift in tone. Early on, managers asked whether the gap could be closed. Later, they asked why it had not been closed yet. The expectation was clear. The number was not a question. It was a destination. Proven court records later showed that fictitious earnings accumulated over multiple reporting periods, reaching into the billions. That scale did not happen by accident. It required repetition and coordination. Allegations described how specific accounts were targeted repeatedly. Adjustments were spread across revenue lines to avoid detection. If one entry looked suspicious, it was broken into several smaller ones. This was not subtle creativity. It was deliberate concealment. Employees who questioned the entries faced consequences that were rarely formal but always felt. They were excluded from meetings. Their responsibilities were reduced. Some were reassigned to less visible roles. Others were told their attitudes were not aligned with company culture. Executives continued to emphasize loyalty. They framed skepticism as negativity. According to later testimony, employees were reminded how much they earned, how competitive their positions were, and how easily they could be replaced. This was not delivered as a threat. It did not need to be. The manipulation created a trap that tightened with every successful quarter. Once earnings were overstated, future quarters had to compensate not only for real performance, but for past fiction. The lie had to grow to survive. Finance teams felt this escalation directly. Targets increased. The margin for error disappeared. Late nights became longer. The instructions became more explicit. Allegations stated that some employees were directed to post false entries even when they objected. Others claimed they were told the adjustments had executive approval and should not worry about accountability. Responsibility was blurred intentionally. Proven evidence later established that multiple executives were aware of the false reporting. At this stage in the story, what mattered was perception. Employees believed the orders came from the top. That belief made resistance feel pointless. The psychological toll mounted. Some accountants reported anxiety, insomnia, and fear of audits. They understood the risk. They also understood the cost of refusal. A few began to document what they were told. Others saved copies of spreadsheets. These actions were not coordinated. They were acts of quiet self-defense. The company's public image continued to shine. Earnings calls were upbeat. Growth projections remained strong. Analysts praised consistency. Each positive reaction reinforced the internal justification. The fraud, as later proven, did not rely on a single mastermind moment. It relied on momentum. Once the system was in motion, stopping it required courage that few felt they could afford. The reversal came not from a sudden moral awakening, but from exposure risk. As the volume of false entries grew, so did the paper trail. Internal concerns about audits intensified. Documentation gaps became harder to explain. According to later testimony, some employees warned that the scheme was becoming unmanageable. The response was not to stop. It was to push harder and move faster. This escalation marked a turning point. The fraud was no longer defensive. It was aggressive. Proven records showed that by this stage, the reported earnings bore little resemblance to reality. The company's true financial condition was buried beneath layers of fabricated adjustments. The stakes widened beyond accounting departments. Investors relied on false information. Pension funds held the stock. Employees invested their retirement savings based on reported performance. The cost of the deception expanded with each filing. Inside the company, fear replaced rationalization. Employees understood that exposure was inevitable. The question became timing. Some began to consider whistleblowing. This was not an easy decision. Speaking out meant risking careers, reputations, and financial stability. It also meant confronting powerful executives with legal resources. The pressure that once forced silence now pushed some toward disclosure. The system that demanded obedience had created its own instability. By the end of this phase, the fraud was no longer sustainable. Too many people knew, too many records existed, too many adjustments required explanation. The trap was set. What had begun as quiet pressure to satisfy Wall Street had transformed into a sprawling deception with no clean exit. The next move would not be internal. It would be public. Chapter 3, The Reckoning and the Cost. The collapse did not come from a single dramatic confession. It unfolded through cooperation, documentation, and pressure that finally moved in the opposite direction. Employees who had quietly saved records began speaking to investigators. What started as internal discomfort became formal testimony. Whistleblowers described the directives they received, the entries they were told to make, and the fear that kept them silent. These accounts were no longer rumors. They were evidence. Federal investigators followed the trail. Subpoenas were issued. Forensic accountants reconstructed years of financial statements. They compared reported earnings to underlying transactions and found gaps too large to explain away. The numbers told a story the company had spent years hiding. Proven facts established that reported earnings had been overstated by billions of dollars. The illusion of steady growth collapsed under scrutiny. Each quarter that once looked reliable now appeared artificial. Executives were confronted with documents, testimony, and internal communications. Some denied knowledge. Others acknowledged pressure but minimized intent. Courts would later separate allegation from proof, assigning responsibility based on evidence rather than narrative. The legal process moved slowly but decisively. Charges were filed. Trials followed. Juries heard how the earnings were manufactured and how employees were coerced. The defense argued complexity. Prosecutors argued intent. Convictions came. Senior executives were found guilty on multiple counts related to fraud and conspiracy. Sentences were imposed. Prison terms reflected the scale of the deception and the harm it caused. These outcomes were not symbolic. They were punitive and public. The company itself faced consequences beyond individual convictions. Restatements erased years of reported profits. Stock prices collapsed. Investors lost billions in market value. Retirement accounts tied to the stock suffered irreversible damage. Employees who had remained loyal paid a different price. Layoffs followed restructuring. Careers built at the company ended abruptly. Even those uninvolved in the fraud carried the stigma of association. Whistleblowers faced mixed outcomes. Some were praised publicly after the fact. Others struggled to rebuild careers after being labeled disloyal or difficult. Protection laws existed, but they did not erase professional scars. The healthcare operations continued, but trust did not. Regulators imposed oversight. Governance structures were rebuilt. Compliance programs expanded. These changes came too late to prevent the damage, but were necessary to contain it. The broader impact rippled through corporate America. The case became a reference point for discussions about earnings pressure, executive accountability, and the limits of internal controls. It reinforced the idea that culture can override policy when leadership signals that results matter more than truth. For investigators, the case underscored how financial fraud rarely begins with criminal intent. It often starts with compromise, rationalization, and silence. By the time it becomes criminal, many participants feel trapped. The final cost was not measured only in prison sentences or financial penalties. It was measured in trust lost. Investors learned that audited numbers can lie. Employees learned how quickly loyalty can be weaponized. Executives learned that insulation from consequences is not permanent. Years later, the story still serves as a warning, not because it was unique, but because it was familiar. The pressure to meet expectations did not disappear with the verdicts. It shifted, waiting for the next company willing to blur the line. The mirage was gone. The damage remained.